Good day, beautiful people, and welcome to another episode of the Total Disclosure Podcast. Today is Jeffrey Epstein, episode 4, and we will discuss Trump's relationship with Epstein. I finally got to do my homework and basically got pretty much as deep as one can get on those two and their alleged friendship or business association. I want to start with making another statement about Alexander Acosta. I was clear, I thought that he is guilty of not only obstructing justice and lying to the victims, but also flat out helping Jeffrey Epstein. What I didn't know is that there were some emails that actually leaked in which Lefkowitz, the lawyer for Epstein in the 2008 Palm Beach case, thanked Acosta for the commitment you made to me during our October 12th meeting. Quote, "It seems that he was hopeful that Acosta would abide by a promise to keep the deal confidential and hidden from the press." On a following email, he told Acosta, "You assured me that your office would not contact any of the identified individuals, potential witnesses, or potential civil claimants and their respective counsel in this matter," Lefkowitz wrote. In email after email, Acosta and the lead federal prosecutor, Marie Villafaña, basically deliver Epstein's demands, which often focus on ways to limit the scandal by shutting out his victims and the media, including suggesting that the charges be filed in Miami instead of Palm Beach, where Epstein victims lived. In this email, Villafaña wrote to Lefkowitz, quote, "On an avoid the press note, I can file the charge in district court in Miami, which will hopefully cut the press coverage significantly. Do you want to check that out?" That's a September 2007 email. Federal prosecutors identified 36 underage victims, but none of those victims appeared at his sentencing on June 30th, 2008, in a state court in Palm Beach County. In fact, most victims heard about it on the news. This is when the attorney, Brad Edwards, filed an emergency motion in federal court to block the non-prosecution agreement, but by the time the agreement was unsealed, over a year later, Epstein had already served his sentence and been released from jail. The attorney, Edwards, declined to comment for this story. In never consulting with the victims and keeping it secret, he added, "It showed that someone with money can buy his way out of anything." It was Brad Edwards, in fact, who was interviewed by Derek Bros in 2018, who claimed that Trump was the only person subpoenaed during the Palm Beach case that fully cooperated with the authorities and actually gave lots of useful information and was pleased to help. Sounds like the information he gave on Epstein was incriminating enough to please the lawyer, but there's no way to confirm either way, as I'm sure the lawyer protects Trump's testimony and has to treat it as confidential. It seems, with this friendship that between Trump and Jeffrey Epstein, that something happened in between 2002 and 2009 that severed their alleged relationship. It's known they were good friends during the 90s, but by then nobody knew about Epstein's illegal activities, and so there could be nothing, or there could be something. One thing is certain. Trump didn't fly 27 plus times to the pedophile island. That was Bill Clinton. And true, Bill Clinton has not been president of the States for, what, 20 plus years? But his wife, and apparently the woman who had the pants in that relationship, and also during Bill's two terms, was a candidate just 3 years ago. So whether you like it or not, the Clintons are still relevant. Hillary Clinton still controls a large portion of the DNC. As far as we know, Donald Trump flew only once on the Lolita Express, and it was to catch a ride from Florida to New York City. Epstein wasn't on the plane, his brother Mark Epstein was. There's this famous quote that, you know, made people wonder what Trump meant. Well, he said, "I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. He likes beautiful women as much as I do. And many of them are on the younger side." This is kind of problematic because it helps prove that Trump and Epstein are indeed friends. It also proves that Trump knew Epstein was into younger women, though he didn't specify just how young. And it means that when Trump named Alexander Acosta to his cabinet, he almost surely knew that Acosta was the prosecutor who let Epstein off the hook. So you gotta wonder, what are the motivations to select someone like Acosta? And unless Trump knows something we don't know, that Acosta had a sudden change of morals, integrity, and values, why would you help someone like that if you claim to be against pedophilia and human trafficking? Because, you know, as much as I like Trump, because I'm gonna say it, I like Trump in the way he, mainly the way he trolls the fake news media, CNN, MSNBC, I'm not a big fan of Fox, never been, but, you know, at this time, I think Fox is maybe the least dishonest of them all, because they are all dishonest. I mean, I want to make clear that both wings belong to the same bird. This is not a partisan issue. This is not left versus right. I'm wrong, you're right. This is a battle against monsters, against the elites, and the elites form part of the DNC and the GOP. So there's no difference here. We have been hearing about Trump's intention to fight human trafficking, and I finally got to do an analysis on that data. The story that we have heard also is that when Trump found out that Epstein had preyed on a young girl who worked as a hostess at his Mar-a-Lago club, there are witnesses who said that when Epstein showed up at Mar-a-Lago after the fact, Trump immediately began an argument with him and physically threw him out of the door and banned him from the premises. This could not be proven by lawyer Brad Edwards, even though he filed a description of this event in court for the Palm Beach case, and we now know Virginia Roberts was actually recruited in the club by Ghislaine Maxwell. What was Virginia doing in there in the first place? I mean, I gotta read Virginia's book. I haven't. There's too much things going on at this time, and it's very hard for me to focus on just one case, but it's on my bucket list. You can bet on that. I also gotta add to this that Epstein was not a member of the club, but lived 50 minutes away from it. It is also rumored that Ghislaine Maxwell was a member, and in fact she had an office inside the club. I would love to dig about that further, and we'll probably figure it out by the time I do Ghislaine Maxwell's episode. It was reported by The Guardian that Epstein apparently had information on shady real estate dealings by President Trump. As the story goes, in 2004, Epstein invited Trump to see a $36 million mansion he planned to purchase in Palm Beach, and Trump ended up buying it behind Epstein's back for about $40 million. Epstein allegedly knew Trump had been selling his name in real estate deals and assumed he'd done so with a Palm Beach home, masking the property's true owners. Epstein, according to the Guardian report, threatened to expose the deal. Trump did say on the media he has not spoken to Epstein in 15 years, so that would make it 2004, matching this information. Now, we're going to discuss Trump and Epstein. There's a case of alleged rape that has to be discussed, even though some people think it's a hoax, like many other hoaxes that the media has pushed on Trump. And you would think something like this would stick if there was evidence to it. It's the rape of Katie Johnson and her sister Maria Johnson. This allegedly happened in 1994. In fact, I have the papers here. The plaintiff Katie Johnson alleges she was subject to extreme sexual and physical abuse by the defendants, Donald J. Trump and Jeffrey E. Epstein, including forcible rape during a four-month time span covering the months of June-September 1994, when plaintiff Johnson was still only a minor of age 13. The plaintiff, Katie Johnson, alleges she was enticed by promises of money and a modeling career to attend a series of underage sex parties held at a New York City residence of defendant Jeffrey E. Epstein and attended by defendant Donald J. Trump. It goes into horrible details about what happened, including details about oral copulation and threesomes with another victim, named here Maria Doe, 12 years old, that was also a victim of Trump and Epstein. The detail that people use to immediately dismiss this story as a hoax is that the lawyer of the plaintiff was none other than Lisa Bloom, who was in charge and was the lawyer for the Clintons during the Hillary Clinton campaign against Donald Trump. So you could say there was a reason to find someone to testify against Trump and, of course, blame him. You would think that they wouldn't try to expose Jeffrey Epstein as well by doing this, but by 2016, the whole internet community already knew about Epstein. It seems that as soon as Trump won the elections, the case was dropped and the girls went into hiding. Now, according to some investigators, and I will link some videos in the description on both sides, because I want you to make your own decision, and I want to keep things neutral. I mean, my political preferences are my political preferences, but if Trump is guilty of anything, I want him to rot in jail, period, or hang, I don't care. You know, it makes no difference to me. I don't owe anything to anybody. In a deposition that Jeffrey Epstein gave years ago, Epstein was asked this question: have you ever socialized with Donald Trump in the presence of females under the age of 18? Epstein's answer was, "Thought I'd like to answer that question. At least today I'm going to have to assert my 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendment rights, sir." Quote, why wouldn't he just say no? I mean, it's like he's trying to let on that he indeed was in presence of minors with Trump. But maybe it was just a revenge after they had a beef over business gone wrong. And, you know, it's certainly possible that Trump is guilty of sexual crimes, or that he was being framed. I mean, let's think logically here, because it's pretty interesting that Epstein's and Clinton's many accusers are still around, but Trump's one accuser, connected with Epstein, connected with Clinton, vanished after the election. I don't know how good Trump is at faking another persona, but we know for a fact that Clinton has had people killed. Lots of people. I'm not even kidding. If you don't believe the Clintons have a heavy body count, you need to do your homework, because 9 of the former bodyguards of Bill Clinton are dead. 9. Go ahead and do the math on the odds for that to happen. And I'm not even counting the other dozens of creepy, freaky deaths, accidental deaths and suicides that, you know, surround the Clinton family. Because, frankly, I could do three episodes about just their body count. Is that extensive? And as far as I know, Trump has never got anybody killed. I mean, if you know about someone that was killed by Trump, or you know, a hit hired by Trump, please let me know. Send me a message. I want to know. I want to know for sure. You know, Clinton has a long history of hanging out with sexual monsters. He was super close with Harvey Weinstein. He was super close with Kevin Spacey. I mean, they actually said to the press that they had a bromance. What kind of bromance is that? Love for pedophilia? He was recently photographed on vacation with George Nader, convicted of 10 counts of pedophilia. I don't see the same pattern with Trump. What I do see is a pattern of Trump being unfaithful slime ball with his wives. But, you know, that's not a crime. You can criticize him for that lacks morals, integrity, values, but that's not a crime, and that's not corruption, and that's certainly not pedophilia. I'm not defending Trump, just pointing out that there's way more evidence to convict Clinton of sexual crimes. So I'm just suggesting, let's go for the easy one first, and then let's go for the harder ones, you know? The ones we don't have much evidence or much history to talk about, like Trump. Even though he's known to be a womanizer, during the 90s he was out of control after his divorce. You know, Epstein and Trump had something in common. They both like women. The difference is perhaps the age of those women. Neither of the men drank alcohol or used drugs. At least not after 2000. Epstein never did. I've heard rumors that Trump used to drink and do a little bit of coke in the 80s, but, you know, it was the 80s. Who didn't? There's also the book named Filthy Rich, published in 2016 by James Patterson. He confirmed the Mar-a-Lago incident, and so did Trump to the press, like, probably 3 weeks ago, before Epstein was killed. But there's no evidence. Patterson said on TV that there was a woman that used to work on Mar-a-Lago that he interviewed for the book and gave him details about the incident. I mean, but Patterson also has some things that made me go, this guy is doing some damage control for somebody. Because Patterson says that neither Trump or Clinton knew about the pedophilia. He kind of loses credibility by endorsing Clinton. I mean, I'm gonna go on a limb here, but I'm pretty sure Clinton is a freaking pedophile. I'm sorry. And I used to be a Democrat. I mean, but I'm sorry. It's the way it is. And, you know, to make things worse, James Patterson went on a book tour with Bill Clinton after 2016, who we know is a sex criminal and has a very distasteful past as president and as a governor of Arkansas, doing mob hits and selling cocaine, importing cocaine with the help of George Bush and the CIA. I mean, they're close friends. So if you really see this from a neutral standpoint, it seems everyone is playing a part. We know Clinton, Epstein, and their closest associates are all criminals. The only question here is Trump playing a part too? Or is he as compromised as the rest? It is said by Trump supporters that he's responsible for more than quadrupling the number of pedophiles that have been arrested, compared with Barack Obama's numbers over the 8 years he was in office, or compared with any previous president for that matter. That if you go and look on the DOJ website, every single day the list is full of arrests for offenses against children, such as child endangerment, child pornography, pedophilia, child sex trafficking, etc. I believe folks have an obligation to tell all of the stories and not just part of it. So I'm trying to do this here. At least on his public posture, back in 2011, Trump tweeted, "We got to do something about all of these missing children. Quick trial and death penalty for pedophiles." You can pull that tweet up today. It's still there. He's the first president to even address the pedophile problem in the US. No other president in history has even touched the subject. There's also the fact that immediately upon taking office, he formed a task force and issued an executive order against human trafficking and child sex trafficking. This task force is responsible for busting some of the largest child sex trafficking rings in the world and inside the United States. They are responsible for bringing down the worldwide online child sex trafficking site Backpage. That much is true. And you know, some people argue that Backpage wasn't the prostitution site, but it was. I mean, I sold things sometimes using Craigslist and Backpage, but I remember that Backpage was like half sexual ads. I mean, escorts, you name it. And I didn't venture into it, but you know, there were probably minors in there. I mean, if they said there were minors, there were minors. And it's totally possible. I mean, the other day, and this shit is the kind of shit that traumatizes you, because the other day, one of my followers asked me to check this Twitter profile because it was advertising pedophilia. Of course, she didn't warn me what I was gonna see. So I go into the fucking profile and I see some horrendous thing that, you know, it. You want to gouge your eyes out after seeing something like that. I'd rather not see anything like that. Never again. I mean, I have checked my fair share of evidence, and I don't want to see it anymore. I know it's there. I know what it is. I know it happens every day. But I don't want to have to watch it anymore. I mean, it's terrible. I reported the profile. I don't even know how those profiles exist on freaking Twitter, and it seems they last for weeks and nobody does nothing about it. But of course, Twitter is super fast when trying to censor you because you said that someone was a dumbass. Like the other day, I called Gabe Hoffman some names, like he was a shill and a double agent piece of shit or whatever, and like 30 minutes later I was banned for 12 hours. But you know, kiddie porn, that's fine, that's perfect, that's aces. Cool Jack Dorsey, sorry for the rant. So he formed a task force, right? In 2016, the last year of the Obama administration, they had a grand total of a little less than 400 arrests for pedophilia or child sex trafficking. Within 3 months of President Trump taking office, not only had he formed a task force to deal with the problem, but his administration had already arrested over 3,000 just in the first 3 months. So compare 400 arrests for 8 years to 3,000 for 3 months. The number is astronomical. And, you know, the Nexium case is a result of the work of a Trump-founded human trafficking task force. You know, you'll find that there are big names like Congressman Adam Schiff and others who are tied up in this Nexium case, as well as the Clinton Foundation. And now we have the Epstein case. Yeah, they dropped the ball because the freaking guy is dead or escaped or I don't know. I only know I don't feel confidence in getting justice in this case. But I don't know if that was Trump's fault. I mean, and look, it's probably true that Trump is not supervising this arrest, that this has nothing to do with him. These are the task force that he created. Yeah, but it's a direct consequence of what he did. Setting aside Obama for the moment, we know that the Clintons have been involved in child sex trafficking and associated cover-ups, mainly through their foundation. Their Attorney General, Eric Holder, gave free guns to human traffickers in Mexico. You know, El Chapo and all those big drug traffickers, they survive because politicians let them survive. And they make money for those politicians in Mexico and in the States. So the rise in prosecution during the Obama years clearly is not directly connected to the priorities of the administration or cabinet members. The prosecution rate has slowed down, according and referenced by courthousenews.com. Since 2017. From the very start of his presidency, we saw executive orders targeting international human trafficking organizations, but you know, as some cases developed and some people got arrested, things kind of slowed down. and I will add the links for those official numbers. The reference prosecution rate shows values from under 100 to over 250, and only references federal prosecutions under Title 18, Section 1591. So it does not cover other forms of human trafficking, child porn production, distribution, etc. So it is not an all-encompassing figure to serve as an effective proxy to answer the question posed. And as far as you know, is Trump really fighting human trafficking? So then, what is the correct amount? What is the correct count? And are there other arrest prosecutions underway that are not represented by the featured data? There's information in this case, not released by the government, but collected by Q folks that assembled some public information resources to answer that question. As per open source state government records, there have been 12,434 human trafficking arrests since Trump took office, of which 298 have occurred thus far in 2019. 2017 and 2018 feature several major busts as part of coordinated operations, each of which took down hundreds of traffickers all at once, bolstering the totals for those years. Those same public records, and those are available for you to look for, indicate there are currently 94,434 sealed criminal cases throughout the United States, and those are the spreadsheets that these Q people have put together. I will include that on the description for you to make your own decision. If this is legit, you can. If you don't think the spreadsheets are accurate, or if you feel they're bloated with fake indictments to make it seem that they're being more effective than they really are, you can go and check the public records. From what I can tell, that number of sealed criminal cases is higher than the historical averages, and has exploded since Trump's inauguration. Obviously, only a small percentage of those likely involve sex crimes or human trafficking, and we have no way of knowing until the proceedings are unsealed. Nevertheless, it's valuable, a material context toward evaluating the priorities of Trump's Department of Justice, if its takedown of trafficking networks, as known as red lines. Of course, if we are to take the Epstein case rationally given this context, it indicates that many more unsealed indictments are on the way. If you can prove to the class that the present number of sealed criminal cases is 1. Normal by historical averages, and 2. Unrelated to the takedown of human trafficking organizations like NXIVM, Epstein, Clinton Global Initiative, etc., you'll have proven to your case that the Trump administration is not prioritizing prosecution of human trafficking. I don't believe you can prove 1, but perhaps you'll find info that I didn't find. Categorically, 2 cannot be disproven until we see a significant percentage of cases unsealed. And so we have to remain vigilant and see what the US president does next. He has been demanding justice on the Epstein murder on the media, and also jabbing at Bill Clinton, saying he went to the island and people should look into that. I mean, I'm all for arrests. Considering what happened to Epstein and what I now know from Acosta, and he being appointed by Trump as a Secretary of Labor, I gotta say, I'm not sold either way about Trump and Epstein. And I'm not gonna tell you what to think either. I hope this information I presented, and if you went and checked the links, that you can make your own decision. If you already hate Trump, you're probably already made it. But if you don't, perhaps you can be a little bit more neutral towards the possibility he at least acted in a corrupted way by electing Alexander Acosta. Or maybe someone pressured him to do so, but either way, if he was pressured to do so, you gotta wonder who's pulling the strings. So it's not like not everything that's going on is good, guys. I mean, if that human trafficking data is correct, that's awesome, but You know, we need to see action on the biggest cases. And, you know, Kid Ranieri is in jail, but Kid Ranieri was a nobody. You know, financially and as far as fame and fortune, he was a nobody. He was big at Nexium, of course, but nobody knew about him outside of Nexium. So I want to discuss Epstein's other properties besides New York City and Florida, Palm Beach. Of course, there's the famous baby breeding ranch in New Mexico called the Zorro Ranch in Santa Fe. Zorro was a comic book figure from the 20s with a secret underground base. The Zorro's girlfriend was named Lolita Pulido. It kind of reminds you of the Lolita Express. An underground base, I think there's an underground base in New Mexico. Jeffrey Epstein purchased the nearly 8,000-acre New Mexico ranch from Governor Bruce King in 1993 for $12 million. That's the year Bill Clinton became president. Jim Baca was brought on by Clinton, and Bill Richardson worked with Clinton on the NAFTA passage, both of which received thousands in campaign contributions from Epstein. I wasn't able to trace the records from 1993. However, the Santa Fe County Assessor's records do reflect Jeffrey Epstein under Zorro Ranch Trust in 2011, which later switched to Cypress Incorporated in 2013. Though his name is not indicated on the Cypress Incorporated records, the New Mexico State Land Office provided the state's Attorney General's office with documents indicating that Cypress Incorporated is indeed owned by Jeffrey Epstein. In fact, they are currently looking into 1244 acres of state trust land that Cypress Incorporated has leased since 1997. According to county records, he began constructing the mansion in 1994, and of course, by the time multiple sections were added, the overall square footage of the mansion came to 57,420. And if you have not checked the videos, there's people that went in as close as you can get to the front door on the next New Mexico compound, and there were people there. They actually released some dogs on the people reporting, and I will link the video in the description. But let's talk about some of the curiosities around this property. Over 20,000 acres of Hollywood landscape sit just north of Epstein's land, purchased by fashion designer Tom Ford in 2001. Tom Ford was another name in Epstein's Black Book. They have filmed over 30 movies in that location. In addition to Epstein giving over $50,000 in campaign funds to former Attorney General Gary King, the King family's land surrounds Zorro Ranch on all sides, and their political and defense connections go all the way up to ballistic missiles. So this is people connected with the military, and they're surrounding Epstein's property. Do you think they didn't know what Epstein was all about? Or do you think that they were indeed protecting him, secluding the ranch from strangers, from curious people? Whereas they do not specify his New Mexico ranch in the New York indictment, Zorro Ranch is allegedly being investigated by New Mexico authorities, who are assisting federal authorities in New York. Although, you know, I don't really have much faith in that. There's an enormous symbol in the backyard, almost as big as the house, almost, that represents the lost city of Atlantis. What does that mean? We also know one of Epstein's planes appears to have flown to Antarctica the day Epstein was first attacked on his cell by his former cop cellmate, according to the lawyer. Was that a cover to get him out of the cell and take him to the wild continent, where there have been rumors of underground cities, bases belonging to the elites and the military? Some people think Atlantis was buried below Antarctica. So, you know, if you want to go ahead and, you know, let go wild with the theories, you can wonder, because why is Epstein's plane not grounded if he's in freaking jail? Foreign and domestic identifies the fact that one of Jeffrey Epstein's suspected trafficking aircraft shared the same tail number, which is M4748W, as a State Department Bronco used under contract by DynCorp. The use of this tail number by the Department of State and DynCorp can be corroborated by official government records. This would mean that Jeffrey Epstein trafficked underage girls using a tail number registered by DynCorp and during the same time period as DynCorp when they trafficked minors in Bosnia and other parts of the Balkan states. If issued by some sort of accident, or if one of the two aircrafts was decommissioned, the statistical odds of just two crafts sharing the same number will still be over 1 in over 900,000. It turns out this same tail number has been assigned by the FAA twice, most recently to Centurion Aviation LLC, after the number was deregistered to the State Department in 2010, the number was reassigned to Centurion Aviation's Cessna P210N in 2014. Additional information on Centurion Aviation and their connections to the CIA can be found on a blog post by Poster Orwell New. To summarize, Epstein does have a history with underage girls from the Balkan states, namely Nadia Marcinkova, from purchasing his Yugoslavian sex slave to the modeling agency MC2 with Jean-Luc Brunel. Epstein had trafficked Eastern European girls to a dinner party Vanity Fair mentions, where guests were horrified that they were surrounded by Epstein's young Russian girls. Quote, "It may yet to be revealed how much of a role Epstein may have played in the human trafficking pandemic in the Balkans." And you know, this is all connects back to Monica Peterson and Chris Cornell. I spoke about DynCorp being involved in sex trafficking in Colombia, Croatia, and Haiti. And not only that, Monica Peterson was supposed to be one of the contacts of Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington, feeding them information on the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation and the people that went there, artists that set up fake charities and NGOs to partake in human trafficking and other nefarious activities. But not only that, remember Monica Peterson's professor, Claude Diestre, worked for DynCorp for 3 years. He was CIA. So if you think that he's going to be telling the truth about what happened to Monica Peterson, think again. Because this guy is involved with these same people that are involved with Epstein. So why is this so significant that politicians, government, and Hollywood all insulate Epstein's property? Are you gonna tell me they didn't know what was going on with this lunatic? Because the scientists knew. There also seemed to be a freaking labyrinth behind Epstein's property. You know, you gotta wonder what kind of sick games this guy loved to play with girls. Did some of these people release innocent kids to hunt them down in this labyrinth? Much like, you know, some kind of the Labyrinth of the Fawn or the Hunger Games scenario, because I've heard rumors that that's what used to happen, or that was what Epstein planned to do on Great St. James, his second island. Let's talk a bit about Bruce King. Bruce King was a World War II veteran and politician who served 3 consecutive 4-year terms as the governor of New Mexico. He was a member of the DNC and was the longest serving governor in New Mexico history with 12 years of service. He also seems to be the most corrupt one, sadly. His career in politics began when he was elected to the Santa Fe Board of County Commissioners in 1954. He was re-elected and served as the chairman of the board during his second term. In 1959, he was elected to the New Mexico House of Reps. He served 5 consecutive terms in the House, and during 3 of his terms, he was the Speaker of the House. During 1968 and 69, King was chairman of the State Democratic Party. And in 1969, he was also the president of the State Constitutional Convention. In 1970, King was elected as governor, defeating Republican Pete Dominici. He served as the 23rd, 25th, and 28th governor from 1971 until 1975, 1979 until 1983, and 1991 until 1995. King became the first governor who could succeed himself after the term limit laws were changed to 2 and ran for re-election in 1994, but was defeated for a 4th term by then Republican businessman and future libertarian presidential nominee Gary Johnson. So that's the man that was protecting Epstein and selling him the ranch and, you know, insulating his property. But let's talk also about Bill Richardson, who seems to be guilty of being with minors as well. I think he was on the Lolita Express as well. He was the 30th governor of New Mexico from 2003 to 2011. He was also a U.S. ambassador to the United Nations and energy secretary in the Clinton administration, a U.S. congressman, chairman of the 2004 Democratic National Convention, and chairman of the Democratic Governors Association. You know, these people are all connected with the same sewer rats. In December 2008, he was nominated for the cabinet-level position of Secretary of Commerce in the first Obama administration, but withdrew a month later as he was investigated for possible improper business dealings in New Mexico. Although the investigation was later dropped, it damaged Richardson's career as his second and final term as a New Mexico governor concluded. So you see, this Sorrel Ranch was heavily protected and guarded by the establishment. And this is the place that Epstein planned to use as a breeding camp for babies, 20 babies, 20 women that he wanted to impregnate. And he doesn't specify artificially. I guess he wanted to do it the old school way, right? Like Epstein does. And, you know, it's no longer a conspiracy theory. You know, the New York Times is reporting on it. And, you know, the New York Times is as controlled as can be. It's controlled by intelligence. I just confirmed this with one of my tweets, and you know, it's disgusting. Mr. Epstein's vision reflected his long-standing fascination with what has become known as transhumanism, the science of improving the human population through technologies like genetic engineering and artificial intelligence. Critics have likened transhumanism to a modern-day version of eugenics, the discredited field of improving the human race through controlled breeding. Epstein was a confessed transhumanist, a creed that believes in, you know, accelerating evolution with the aid of AI. Cryogenics and cybernetics are also revered by these people. Is this simply a form of narcissism, or of the end justify the means, or as some people suggest, Luciferianism, where God is seen as evil, stopping humans achieving their true potential? Sultan Ismail was linked to Jeffrey Epstein. He's a U.S. presidential candidate. He's president of the Transhumanist Party. I shit you not. The party's goals explain: they seek for the beneficial genetic modification of plants, animals, and human beings, life extension and anti-aging artificial intelligence, electronic devices to detect and respond to trauma, 3D printing, universal basic income, and nanotechnology. Epstein donated $120,000 to the transhumanist organization known as Humanist Plus. He planned to develop an improved super race of humans with his DNA and start a colony in Terramar. Yeah, that's Ghislaine Maxwell's Terramar. Epstein has been heavily involved in funding research into AI, evolutionary dynamics, and mind, brain, and behavior. In other words, mind control. He also hosted important eugenic pushers like Stephen Hawking and Bill Gates. And you know, besides that $30 million donation that I spoke about in a previous episode that Epstein did to Harvard, he's been funding entire buildings since 1990. Despite being funded by the richest endowment in the world, the university has refused to return any of the money Epstein donated. Government already has fronts working on eugenics like Bayer and Monsanto. And let's not forget Elon Musk, who was photographed with Ghislaine Maxwell. And you know, curiously enough, back when Elon Musk went to Joe Rogan and smoked pot, and his the value of Tesla dropped like crazy after he was seeing a smoking pot in social media, he declared that artificial intelligence then was the biggest threat to humanity. Now today, Elon Musk is saying that his Neuralace artificial intelligence implant that he wants to make mandatory for everyone to have implanted into their brain. He now changed his tune. He said he didn't know Epstein, but then he changed his tune and said he only met Epstein once at Epstein's New York mansion. What was he doing there? Did Epstein give him money? Did Elon got a date with one of Epstein's girls and he changed his tune about artificial intelligence after being blackmailed? You know, Ghislaine Maxwell and Elon Musk arm in arm at the Academy Awards show back in 2012. There's a picture there and I will upload it on my post on Twitter and Facebook. I bet Elon Musk is familiar with Epstein's compound in New Mexico and he knows all about Mr. Epstein's transhumanism dreams. That's right up his alley, wouldn't you say? Mr. Epstein attracted a number of heavy, prominent scientists, including Nobel Prize winning physicist Murray Gell-Mann, who discovered the quark and works for CERN in Switzerland, who, you know, are also involved in some strange shit. The theoretical physicist and best-selling author Stephen Hawking, the paleontologist and evolutionary biologist Stephen Jay Gould, Oliver Sacks, the neurologist and best-selling author, George M. Church, a molecular engineer who has worked to identify genes that could be altered to create superior humans, and the MIT theoretical physicist Frank Waxek, a Nobel laureate. The lure for some of the scientists was Mr. Epstein's money, of course, to finance their projects. You know, the lure for that money blinded them to the seriousness of Epstein's sexual deviance. But they never failed to gather around Epstein at dinner parties in his Manhattan mansion and probably in his New Mexico compound, where Dom Perignon and expensive wine flowed freely. You know, he hosted a buffet at Harvard's Program for Evolutionary Dynamics, which he helped start with a $6.5 million donation. Others flew to conferences sponsored by Mr. Epstein in his little St. James Island. And in fact, Mr. Stephen Hawking was crowded on board a submarine that Mr. Epstein had chartered because, you know, Mr. Hawking had never been in a submarine. So Epstein obliged him. Why did Epstein had a submarine, you know? Because we have heard about the underground locations in his island and that there is a entrance underwater for submarines in the island. So, you know, this is just like freaking Dr. Evil or Lex Luthor or some kind of strange situation like that. The Harvard psychologist Steven Pinker said he was invited by colleagues, including Martin Novak, a Harvard professor of mathematics and biology, and theoretical physicist Lawrence Krauss to salons and coffee clutches at which Mr. Epstein would hold court. While some of Mr. Pinker's peers held Mr. Epstein as brilliant, Mr. Pinker described him as an intellectual imposter. He would change the subject abruptly, ADD style, dismiss an observation with an adolescent wisecrack, Mr. Pinker said. And in fact, at one session at Harvard, Mr. Epstein criticized efforts to reduce exacerbation and provide health care to the poor because doing so increased the risk of overpopulation. And, you know, Mr. Pinker said he had rebutted the argument, citing research showing that high rates of infant mortality simply caused people to have more children. Mr. Epstein seemed annoyed, and a Harvard colleague later told Mr. Pinker that he had been voted off the island and was no longer welcome at Mr. Epstein's gatherings. On multiple occasions, Epstein, starting in the early 2000s, told scientists and businessmen about his ambitions to use his New Mexico ranch as a base where women would be inseminated with his sperm and would give birth to his babies. According to two award-winning scientists and an advisor to large companies and wealthy individuals, all of whom Epstein told about, it was not a secret. I mean, he boasted about it. You know, Epstein was sick in the head, and he was also interested in cryogenics. He actually discussed about freezing his head and his penis to preserve and, you know, later attach to a younger body, I guess, or some other kind of artificial, I don't know, a machine of some sort that he can teleport his conscience to via cryogenics. I don't know. I'm not an expert. Frankly, I'm not interested. In 2004, Mr. Brockman hosted a dinner at the Indian Summer Restaurant in Monterey, California, where Mr. Epstein was introduced to scientists including Seth Lloyd, the MIT physicist. Mr. Lloyd said that he found Mr. Epstein to be charming and to have interesting ideas, although they turned out to be quite vague. Also, at the Indian Summer Dinner, according to an account on the website of Mr. Brockman's Edge Foundation, where the Google founders Sergey Brin, Larry Page, and Jeff Bezos, all the good-looking women were sitting with the physicist's table. Daniel Dubnow, who was a CBS producer at the time and attended the dinner, was quoted as saying, Mr. Dubnow told the Times that he did not recall the dinner or having said those words. Mr. Brockman was Mr. Gelman's agent, and Mr. Gelman, in the acknowledgments sections of his 1995 book, The Quark and the Jaguar, thanked Mr. Epstein for his financial support. Great St. James is an island of the United States Virgin Islands located off the east end of St. Thomas and belongs to the sub-district East End St. Thomas. The island is approximately 165 acres in size. There is one estate on the island. Great St. James was purchased in 2016 for $80 million by Epstein. Of course, as we all know, Epstein also owned Little St. James, and we will cover that island during next episode because we will also cover the whole Black Book. Now that it's uncensored, it's time to make an expose of the whole book. And I think it's something that a lot of people will benefit from. I will make a mega thread on Twitter as well. So it's at some point, Christian Kajar owned the island. Epstein attempted to buy the island, but the sale didn't go through, partially because islanders begged Christian and his wife Susan Astani not to sell to Epstein. Astani said that at the time there were rumors about Epstein's sexual deviance. So this was known for a long time in the islands. The cove on the west side of Great St. James, Christmas Cove, was a popular snorkeling and mooring spot for day charter boats and yachts. 22 overnight mooring bowls are available, but are not regularly maintained. A sailboat converted into a food truck boat previously sold pizzas there. According to New York Magazine, Epstein shut down Christmas Cove after he purchased the island. And we'll talk more about that pizza selling boat, because that's quite suspicious. I can't imagine something like that being profitable. The larger, more recently purchased Great St. James Island is currently and illegally under construction. I don't know if construction stopped after this guy was killed or swapped or escaped, or I don't know. But the Virgin Islands Department of Planning and Natural Resources issued a stop work order to Epstein for not adhering to environmental regulations. Of course, he didn't care about that, just as he didn't care about those little girls. And he kept building in the island. The plan for the complex included an amphitheater, an underwater office and pool. Epstein was flying girls aged 13 and 14 into St. Thomas for the male pedophiles. They were listed on the manifest as 21, 22-year-old girls, but employees at the airport and some on the island said they were much younger. They were also trafficking Asian, Caribbean, Central American girls and boys younger than 13 for the most extreme pedophiles, a la Kevin Spacey perhaps, Bill Clinton perhaps, who else? You know, you gotta take in consideration that not every pedophile that went to the island is listed on those flag logs or that black book. I guess some people were, you know, to be kept more secret, not documented. And some people have jets and, you know, huge boats to go to the island. You know, it comes to mind the Rising Sun of David Geffen. It comes to mind that Richard Branson's island is very close to Epstein's island. I mean, you could go even by kayak if you wanted to, if you are in shape, I guess. You know, there's reports that go to extreme as to claim that children under the age of 7 were reported to be slaves in the islands. And some children were intended for human sacrifice and satanic ritual abuse. That was the function of the temple and the supposed underground structure below. But we will cover that next episode when we talk about Little St. James and the Black Book, the flight logs on Lolita Express, and whatever else we need to cover to close down this saga. Of course, I want to cover a little bit about his death. It's clear it was murder. If it's really him that the forensics are talking about, it's not some other, you know, body that they swap him for. It was indeed murder. And we will also talk about who's probably guilty of doing so, or who's being framed of doing so, which was his former cop cellmate, I believe. His last name was Artaglioni. It's an Italian last name. And also, I guess we'll have to discuss the aftermath of his death and what we need to focus on, which is Ghislaine Maxwell, Alex Wexner, the Mega Group, the intelligence agencies, CIA, Mossad, MI5, MI6. These are the real focus that people need to start talking about. DynCorp and all these government fronts involved in this mess. More people need to be investigated. More people need to be taken down. If you realize that not every procurer in that black book procured underage kids, you know, we have Naomi Campbell and Courtney Love, for example. Maybe they didn't procure young girls. Maybe they did. But maybe they procured clients. They knew what Epstein was all about. Don't tell me they didn't know. So, until tomorrow, take care. We'll talk later.